What is up, everybody? Welcome to this Trainwreck Sports Podcast, where we are here to pay the bills. Jake Micah, joined once again by my co-host, Mike Bunt at Bunt Takes on YouTube. Find him on our Instagram, Twitter platforms, dropping knowledge all over the Buffalo sports scene. Bunty, how you doing today?
I'm doing great and excited to talk some Bills football.
Oh, hell yeah. We're getting into it. I mean, only a couple weeks. Less than 2 weeks from the draft now, which is crazy. I can't believe we're already here. It's insane. But we gotta pay the bills here. We are sponsored by Outlet Liquor, your place to buy a case in Western New York. Deals all weekend. I know the weather is beautiful, supposed to be beautiful this weekend. So get down there, get your cases, get whatever you need. Outlet Liquor, the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? So we have to start with the news. Last week we had very raw reactions. It was the day of the Stephon Diggs trade last Wednesday. You and I jumped on here and gave our immediate reactions. Now we're about over a week removed. We've had some more information come out from a bunch of people. I know you've had some videos and some information that you've had to share about Stephon Diggs in the last week or so. So the fallout a week later, how are you feeling now about this move by the Buffalo Bills? Do you think it was a necessary move for this team? Do you think it was the logical next step? Was there any salvaging? Was there a way that Diggs could have been on this team, or did Brandon Bean make the right decision?
There was no salvaging it. It was absolutely the right move. I was happy at the time the trade was made, and I'm happier now, a week later, after having time to process it. We all know about the drama that happened behind the scenes now. There was a lot of speculation last year. Was it as bad as what the media was making it seem? I went over in our last pod the reasons why I actually think it was probably a little bit worse than what many people had thought, especially inside the Bills fan base. What I can tell you is I've been told that Diggs had requested a trade. I know that's not out there. No one officially has reported that, but I have been told that he had requested a trade from inside the Bills locker room. And I had also been told that his relationship with Josh Allen was not what people thought it was. Maybe the first few years they were close, they were good. Definitely not last year. We went over, when did it start? We know the Cincinnati game played a role in everything regarding Stephon Diggs not believing in the Bills championship window anymore. That mini camp incident definitely was a big deal. McDermott said he was very concerned, and I think at the time we were wondering, is this just him hyping this up a little bit more? No, that was a true worry. And then we've gone into more details. Obviously, Diggs kind of went through the motions at times in front of the media. Same with Josh Allen. They would act like they were brothers on the field. The two were not that close. And this was the inevitable solution to the problem for both sides.
Yeah. It's great information there. And it seems like, you know, we've gotten little trickles of stuff and we've seen how Diggs has kind of reacted to fans. I mean, there was from his Finstagram account, which is, you know, it is what it is. Like, you want to talk about where we're getting the source from. We all know Diggs has a burner Instagram account. If you've been following along, coming after Bills fans on there. If you checked his likes on Twitter, complaining about Bills fans. Now, mind you, that makes us all sound like very like scorned, like ex-girlfriends or boyfriends on Instagram, like going deep into diving and seeing what Stephon Diggs is up to. But besides that point about how Bills fans are reacting to it, it shows just how broken his relationship was with not only the teammates, but with how he felt about the fan base too, and what he was hearing over and over again, and probably seeing. We know that he's a terminally online guy. Like, there's no, like, if you have a fake Instagram account, you're terminally online. Like, that's just too much. And we know that Diggs, all the tweets and everything else in the last couple years, like, he was doing it because he liked getting the reaction online. Whether it was from, you know, a place of unhappiness, there was the come and rescue me tweet from last year, I believe. And that was like, I mean, now looking back, yeah, probably was asking some team to come and get him out of Buffalo. But regardless, if it was that or if it was just to rile up some speculation, that's what he enjoys doing to the fan base and everything else. Not just this fan base, but the Vikings fan base in the past too, which is like, Vikings fans had been in everybody's mentions the last couple of years, like, hey man, listen, this is the Diggs experience. It's going to blow up in your face. And that's what ended up happening. So Stephon Diggs, like you said, he's told us who he was like the whole time. And a lot of us wanted to just ignore it. I was one of those people thinking, yeah, like they could still make it work, whatever it is. But he's told us who he was on and off the field. Honestly, his whole career at this point. And I couldn't agree more with you. It seems like it was a necessary end to this relationship to get this team to move forward into a new era and kind of just help, like, it is helping them move forward, but also helping them have like a fresh and new kind of leadership structure on this team, because Diggs was he was a captain of this team. He was looked to as a leader, and you see like some, if you have that kind of dissension in the locker room between your star player and your quarterback, or your star player and anybody else in the team and the head coach, it's hard to move forward, especially when the margins are so thin in this league and you're competing with in the AFC with, we know how many great teams that are there around, you know?
Yeah. Most of the captains are gone from last year. You look throughout, Gabe Davis, no longer here. Tyler Matakevich goes on and on and on. So right now, there really is going to be a big change in the leadership structure in Buffalo as this team gets much younger overall. We don't have guys like Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde leading the way anymore, Trey White. This is a very different team going forward, and it's an organization that's embracing a much-needed youth movement, and that could have played a big role in this as well. I don't think that Diggs was hated by the majority of his teammates, but it's clear the Bills thought they don't want that mentality in the locker room anymore, yeah. Especially when they know they need to get younger and that they need to probably address the wide receiver position soon. I was all for a wide receiver in this draft before the Diggs trade. Now it just basically guarantees it's going to happen some point in the top 60. And even though guys like Khalil Shakir and Gabe Davis, when he was on the team, would speak highly of Stephon Diggs, it's fair to say that maybe the Bills didn't want that influence on someone that could be a top 32 pick, that could be the future of their wide receiver position in Buffalo. So regardless of what led to that point, we're at a new point in the franchise where it's going to be very different going forward. I like to look at this as the next window developing for the Bills. We've had this 7-year stretch with Sean McDermott, and then we've had Josh Allen since 2018, where he grew from being this raw rookie to very talented Pro Bowl caliber quarterback his first around his second, third year, to now being the superstar. When you become the franchise superstar quarterback, now it's the expectation that you are going to elevate the players around you, and you don't need this all-pro receiver. You can create one of your own by getting a talented early round pick at wide receiver. And I've said this at the end of Josh Allen's career, this is going to be a 4-year period with Diggs. if they get the right receiver here in the first round, it could be the beginning of a 10-year period with someone else. So that is the way I'm choosing to look at things going forward.
Yeah, I think that that's a great point in just the overall general perception of this Buffalo Bills team and right now and everything else. And it's a larger conversation we could get into. I could go on for days about sports media and what really gets people, like what gets clicks, what gets attention now and everything else, because everybody just wants to say from national media on down, oh, the Bills window is closed, it's over, like the Diggs trade and all these players getting released and everything, there's nothing they can do, they wasted Josh Allen, all this other stuff. Josh Allen is 27 years old, and he's just probably now right in the first year of his prime or entering his prime as an NFL quarterback, like 27, 28, typically in the NFL, NBA, those sports, that's when you enter your prime. It's when you're still in your athletic peak, but you've had the years, you have like the IQ, you've gone through the battles, you've gone through the wars. So when you have a guy like that, and then you have the opportunity, like as you said, to potentially pair him up with a receiver who can help extend his career and be his number one target for potentially 5, 10, 15 years, however long Josh Allen is still effective and wants to play football, whatever that number that may be. You, in this class, which we're going to talk about the draft in a little bit, noted as one of the deepest wide receiver classes we've had in years, where, yes, maybe the Bills are planning to go and make a big swing for one of the top end guys, but they could also get a star on this back half of the first round, in the second round, maybe even one of the later fourth round picks that they have could end up being one of the biggest stars in this class just because of how deep it is. You have to take into account what their development's going to be. And like you said, is Stephon Diggs, was he going to provide the best example? Was he going to be pissed that there was a young guy taking targets away? And how would that dynamic in the room go around? And yes, you know, there's two different things with Diggs, like Shakir and Davis and guys like that praising him and you know, saying good things about him. There's a difference between being a good professional and being a good teammate. And so I think that wide receivers working with him every day, seeing how he, you know, pays attention to his craft and works to become a better player. And Diggs is a great success story in the league, right? Like fifth round pick, wasn't like it was the highest expectations of him. He was a five-star recruit coming out of high school, but it's not like he was surefire NFL superstar coming in and worked his way out of that. Even on Minnesota, was still, you know, should have been wide receiver one to some people's minds on that offense, but was really the second wide receiver in that offense for a long time and got his chance in Buffalo, and they flourished together, him and Allen. So I think it's worth noting that being a good professional and being a good teammate are two things. You can hear good things from guys about Diggs and how he approached the game, and also still not be the best teammate and best person in a locker room for a winning culture. And I think that's what it came down to. Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott saw that calculus. Like, we can't afford to lose one of these prime years of Josh Allen. As much as people wanted to rip on Sean McDermott the last couple years for wasting Josh Allen's prime, I think this move was like, we have to maximize his prime. And if this guy is going to potentially, you know, upend a season with drama again, we can't take that risk. And so I applaud them for taking that chance to do that, because this is still a huge risk. And the perception of it, if Diggs, even at, you know, he's 30 years old on the back half, I don't mind getting rid of guys earlier. I like that approach for teams to get rid of a guy a year earlier than a year late. But that could, if it's the year early, he could still have an all-pro level season with the Houston Texans, depending on how C.J. Stroud develops into his second year and everything else. And that might look tough for Bills fans if their receiver doesn't work out right away. But
I don't think the numbers should matter.
Exactly.
What he does, like, he could have 130 catches, 2,000 yards, set a touchdown record for a receiver this year, and I still would be 100% okay with this trade. For me, and I think this has been an overlooked part of the deal, mm-hmm. besides like all the comments, like, is he a diva? Was he a poison in the locker room? Was there tension between him and Josh? I also look at it as this: the Bills are trying to take all of their lumps at once.
Yes.
Rather than have these salaries, these contracts be carried into the future, when they decided they weren't going to restructure Diggs, I think that's when they also simultaneously decided we have to move on from Poyer. We have to move on from Mitch Morse and Trey, because the solutions going to the offseason to create the salary cap room, we're going to restructure Allen and Diggs, and then maybe we give a few extensions out and rework a few things, or we're going to restructure Allen. We're not going to restructure Diggs. We're going to have to get rid of a lot of these veterans that have been a critical part of our team in recent years. So I think they made the decision to move on from a lot of the vets at the same time they decided we're not going to restructure Diggs. And in doing so, not only did you free up cap from Poyer, Morse, Trey, but then you also decided we're going to take that dead cap hit right now rather than worry about that a year or two from now. So now going to the future, you start that youth movement now in a year where you have all these draft picks. Think about it. Bean made a lot of moves late in that draft last year to create extra late picks this year. He was looking forward to this draft. This is one of those COVID drafts, one of the last ones where you still have guys with that extra experience. It's a higher end talent level that we're seeing in this great draft. Point. And now going forward, if you draft a receiver in the first or second round, you're going to have someone on a much smaller financial contract going forward for the next 4, possibly 5 years. And you'll have freed salary cap space next year to spend how you need. Yep. So to me, it was never about basically getting the team better right now. I think they believe with Josh, with whoever they draft, they're still going to compete at a high level and be able to potentially win the AFC East and make a run in the playoffs. So right now, they are worse for it. Long term, this frees up so much for them to be able to be more aggressive going forward and start that window sooner rather than later. I know some people are saying the window's closing. I think we're going to look back and say, yes, if you look at the window as the veterans that were part of the beginning of the ascension of this team, yes, their window on the Bills ended. But in doing so, we enabled another window to open while not having to go through that purgatory period of a couple years where you're like, we got Josh, but we're going to struggle to get 10 wins.
Yeah.
Now I don't think they're going to be going through that. Maybe this is the year where the struggles happen a little bit, but I still think they're going to have a roster that will be closer to the top of the AFC than being in that wild card / in the hunt picture.
I agree with you. And that's a great segue to get into how we're going to build that roster, because the draft is in 2 weeks and I'm sure you've done the same as me. We've probably seen every single draft scenario so far, especially after the Diggs trade last week, whether it's a trade up, trade down, staying in the same spot. Anything that the Bills can do, we've seen all the different options. So I would like to ask you, Mike, if you were Brandon Bean going into round one Thursday night, what's your ideal? Like, what is your plan going into the night? Like, is it wide receiver or bust? Are you looking to trade up for one of the guys? Do you like enough of the guys at the bottom of the draft? If you were in the chair, what would you be at least strategizing to do before you saw the board?
So I'm a really bad person to ask this question to, because I'm someone that can see the positives of different scenarios. With the position the Bills are in right now, I'm not going to be someone that says they have to do this, they have to do that. Like, there's a lot of things on the table that I would be perfectly content with. I would say my ideal situation, which a lot of fans would disagree with me on, I would love to get either Neighbors or Odunze at number 9. I understand you're giving up draft capital. I understand it's a lot. This is a young team. The arguments would be you can't do that when you need depth and you need other guys in the future. I think getting that pick from Minnesota in the second round changed things for me a lot. Because knowing if you project Minnesota to be a bottom 10 team in the NFL, they'll probably pick somewhere between 35 to 45 in the second round next year. So that's going to be a pick the Bills have. And then if you assume the Bills are going to be a good team, they'll pick around 25. You're talking about your first round pick next year might be only 10 spots higher, maybe less, maybe more than what Minnesota's second round pick is. So you can theoretically move on from that pick and still have another pick in the second round that will be somewhat close in terms of value to what you would have had. Now, the reason I go all in on that if as my ideal scenario is I think Neighbors or Odunze are going to be stars. I think both of them with Josh Allen would light it up. I think Neighbors could have 75-plus catches, 1,000-plus yards as a rookie with Josh Allen. And I'm not kidding. He's a 4.33, one of the best yards after catch guys in the NFL. You got Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir on the other side with Dawson Kincaid. Neighbors is going to have lanes, and he would go off. Odunze, not quite as fast, has the size, has the ability to make difficult catches, would be another great red zone threat. Can you imagine trying to stop Odunze with Kincaid? It'd be really tough for opposing defenses. So my thought is, when Brandon Bean has had a glaring need in the past, he's gone all in on replacing
him.
2018, trades up twice to get to Josh Allen, then trades up again to get Tremaine Edmonds, who, I mean, we can have the debate, but he ended up being a good player for Buffalo. You look at other trades, trading the number one overall pick the Bills had for Stephon Diggs. That is essentially giving up a one for a guy that he thought would be a premium wide receiver, trading up for Kyer, trading up for Dalton Kincaid. So he's shown, and even Von Miller, this wasn't a draft move, but when he thought there was a glaring need at defensive end, he went all in and gave an old veteran $120 million. So Brandon Bean has never been afraid to be aggressive and make bold moves. And I think when you're looking at this draft, and this is what kind of plays into my thinking, there's three guys I know are going to be Pro Bowl receivers. And it's Harrison, it's Odunze and Neighbors. Now, Brian Thomas Jr., I'm excited about him. I wouldn't trade to the top 10 to get him, but I'd be open to a trade in the late teens, early 20s. I think he also has very high upside. But those are the four guys that I think are at the top. Thomas being the most raw of them. I'll say he's in a tier in between the top three guys and then all the other guys that we're looking at 28. So when I look at this roster, a lot of times people say, don't trade up. It's not valuable. The reason why they say that is if you don't have a franchise quarterback in place, it's not worth it.
Exactly.
You need to have a franchise quarterback in place to have it be worthwhile. The Bills have one. You need to have a solid roster around that quarterback. The Bills have a solid roster. You look at this team, the offensive line is set. You got two quality tight ends. Your receiver room is good outside of number one receiver and maybe another boundary guy. You look at the defense. All the starters are pretty much set. Your D-line, you go Epineza, you go Rousseau, Daquan, Ed Oliver, linebacker. You have Bernard, Milano. You got some depth also from some free agent additions. Your corners, you have Benford, you have Rasul Douglas, you have Elam as a backup safety. You brought in a few guys. Safety's a little weak, but there's nobody in the first round at safety that even warrants being picked at 28. So my thought process is you can get a guy that is almost a lock to be a star in the NFL. You get him on a rookie contract. So 5+ years, they're stuck in Buffalo. Odunze and Neighbors are both young. Theoretically, they could be on the team for the next decade with Josh Allen. They could be Josh Allen's Reggie Wayne or Marvin Harrison.
Yeah.
And to me, like, that is worth it when you consider there really isn't a ton of holes on this team. There's weak spots. There's depth concerns. But you also have a lot of later round picks where you can fill those needs. The Bills are normally patient with their high round guys anyway. So if you have that taken into account, a second rounder next year might not even develop into somebody that's going to be contributing on your team for another 3 years anyway.
Yeah.
So that's my preference. I understand why people are against it. But I do think there's pros and cons either way. Some people will say, well, you're better trading down if you're going to trade anything. Even that's not proven. The reason why Belichick had so much success trading down is he had Tom Brady as a starting quarterback. And yes, he had extra darts to throw. He missed on a lot of those darts.
Yes,
because the chances of you hitting on your later picks is lower than your chances of hitting on your earlier picks. And let's be real, Brandon Bean's draft record in the second round has not been good. You look at it, the draft value charts, he hits on his first round guys. Why? Because he is bold and he gets the guys he has a high level belief in. Now, I'll talk about two other scenarios. I'll toss it over to you and then I'll get your thoughts on it. I'm not against, like I said, the trade up to Brian Thomas. I'm not giving up much to make that happen, but I'm okay with it if it makes sense value-wise. Now, staying at 28, I'm not against staying at 28 and drafting a receiver. Now, where I differ from a lot of the people is I've seen everybody fall in love with Ladd McConkey and Xavier Leggett. I like Ladd McConkey. If he's the pick at 28, all for it. Xavier Leggett, I'm cool with it too. Like, I'm not going to be upset. But my field of wide receivers is much bigger than just those two guys. Yes. I would be perfectly fine with Xavier Worthy. I would be perfectly fine with Adonai Mitchell. I like Troy Franklin. Hell, if you told me in the second round the Bills get Keon Coleman, would not be upset. There's a lot of people that have just shut themselves off of Adonai Mitchell, Keon Coleman, and I don't really get it. I understand how the Ladd McConkey love started. There's networks just like us that have been very high on him.
Yes.
And that triculates, that moves, and then kind of the echo chamber, and then suddenly everybody loves Ladd McConkey. Ladd McConkey, let's be real, he's not a first-round grade. He's a high second-round grade. And we're talking about taking him at 28. That is a little bit of a reach in reality. Xavier Leggett, same thing. Some people don't even have him in the top 50. You take a guy like that in the first round, that's a reach. We talked last year about doing that with Josh Downs. The guy ended up going in the third round.
Yep.
So I don't think you have to get those guys at that point in time. Like I said, I'll be fine with either of them. But if I'm staying at 28 and he's available, I think Adonai Mitchell should be the guy. You're talking about a person that has the ability to be a boundary receiver in the NFL. He has the fifth best RAS score since 1987 for receivers out of over 3,000 that have tested. He runs a sub-4.440. He's 6'2". He's 2 years younger than Xavier Leggett, who took 5 years to break out in the SEC. We're talking about a guy who broke out in his third year in college football at Texas. He is a freak athlete. If the complaints are that sometimes his film, he looks slower than what his testing is, and that sometimes he takes routes off. Well, if that's the case and he's still got 11 touchdowns as a junior, a 20-year-old junior, well, that's when the coaches need to get involved and coach him up and take him to that next step. Because in the first round, you're not drafting for the safest guy. You're drafting for the guy that is going to have the highest ceiling, because you're drafting to win a Super Bowl. Drafting safe doesn't win you Super Bowls. It gets you average. It gets you average. And the fact is, a guy like Adonai Mitchell, he might be the biggest risk, but if you talk to scouts, he also has the biggest upside of those people in that tier. I have people that I've spoken to. They have said Adonai Mitchell is a future number one receiver in the NFL. That's inside NFL locker room that I am telling you right now. I'm not talking about the people that you see in the media like Mel Kiper or other draft gurus or any of these networks like us. I'm saying inside an NFL organization, I've been told Adonai Mitchell is a future number one wide receiver. If you have the chance to get that at 28, I think you go for it. Not saying Ladd McConkey, Xavier Leggett, Troy Franklin, any of those other guys, Xavier Worthy, aren't worthwhile. But I think that's the route I would go. If a guy like Adonai Mitchell and Brian Thomas are gone at 28 and we decide to wait, I think that's when you start evaluating, do we take the best available at another position, like defensive tackle, defensive end, probably not safety because the value really isn't there. Do you go another way? Do you trade down? Because if you have a handful of players available, like minus Mitchell, minus Thomas, and you're talking like, okay, we have McConkey on the board. We have Troy Franklin on the board. We have Leggett on the board. At that point, you probably have to start wondering, well, what really differentiates them from the next class of wide receivers?
Yep.
Maybe we trade down. We get another pick here. and then we add a few more day two guys instead of just reaching on one of them at 28. So that's my view. I know that's a long-winded answer to you, but yeah, preference number one, trade up, try to get one of the two guys that are probably going to be stars. Option number two, hope that an Adonai Mitchell or Brian Thomas fall to you at 28 or make a slight trade up for Thomas. Option number three, trade down depending on what's left on the table at 28. And if you had to take McConkey or Leggett at that point, I'm not going to be upset. I just don't think it's an optimal use of a first round pick.
Well, I wish that, you know, for podcast purposes, it'd be better if we completely disagreed, but you laid out pretty much my exact order of how I have these wide receiver prospects too. So I'm very partial to going up and getting Odunze and Neighbors if the trade's there, if they could get up into that range. It feels like the Bears pick might be where if one of those guys slides to there, that's where they can make the move. The Bears only have four picks in this draft. Like, they might want to go back and recoup a little bit, especially, and they already have, like, it would make a lot of sense for the Bears to take one of the premium offensive linemen. Olufashinu played with Caleb Williams in high school. Like, there's a relationship there. They could add a receiver to that room and just give them, I mean, that would be maybe the most dynamic receiver room in the league if you had one of the Neighbors or Odunze added to DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. Like, that's a dangerous, dangerous room. But I could see that being a spot where they're looking to trade back too. So my number one is also, if you can make a move to trade up and get one of those guys, everything you said about the value for next year with the second round pick and everything else, like, if that pick is 37 for the Vikings, ideally, if you're the Bills, you're going to be ideally pick 32. But if it's like pick 28, 27, something like that, what is the difference? Like, and that means that the guy that you went up and traded for worked out for you too. So I'm partial to that. But when it comes to the second tier of guys, the Leggett and McConkey, it's funny that you mentioned those two names because those are the guys that I don't see it with being worth going up and getting. Like, if it's at 28, like you said, or if they traded back or even took them at pick 60, I'd be happier taking the swings on them. But I think Thomas is a step above guys. I think Mitchell is more in line with Thomas than what people have said. And I think the stats, at least for Mitchell, look so good. Those 11 touchdowns happen because 2 years ago, Xavier Worthy was the most dynamic, if not one of the most dynamic receivers in college football. And there was a lot of attention paid to him this year. And they weren't going to let his speed beat them down the field in those Texas games. And there was just a lot of weapons on that offense. But, you know, Jatavion Sanders is going to go in this draft too at a tight end. A lot of talent, a lot of athleticism on that Texas offense allowed for Mitchell to be the go-to target this year. 2 years ago for Quinn Ewers, it was Xavier Worthy. And I was like, man, Xavier Worthy could be. I was thinking coming into this season, I watch a lot of Texas football, Mike. My mom is a huge Texas fan. So I'm like locked in every Saturday to a lot of Texas. And I was thinking coming into last year, like, Xavier Worthy could be, you know, where we were talking about Neighbors. I thought Worthy was going to be that guy. Now, I didn't realize he was so slight. I think that's what hurts him as much as anything else is the build. But the speed and the playmaking ability, that's a guy, if the Bills took it at 28, I would have no.
He might be like. Let's think. We haven't really talked a lot about him, but in recent days, he's starting to get discussed as a top 25 option for teams. And I will say this: I know the Bills have some interest in the Texas receivers.
Oh yeah.
So this is the crazy part. I had this conversation with a good friend who's actually in the Bills media recently. When has Brandon Bean ever been one to tip what the Bills want?
Oh, never.
Never. So we have everybody talking about Leggett, McConkey, some of these wide receivers at 28. And all I hear is all this negative stuff from the fan base about Adonai Mitchell. Could that all be like the Bills are loving it? Like, okay, let people think we don't want this guy. Have him fall to us at 28. Like, you never know what's smoke, what's not this time of the year. But like, I think about the Bills' recent drafts and like who knew they were going to draft Dalton Kincaid last year? Like that came out of nowhere. The year they draft Greg Rousseau, very few people, if any, had Rousseau mocked to the Bills that year. So even Kyrie Elam, I did see some. It was kind of obvious they were going to draft a corner, and the thought was McDuffie was going to be gone. And
They wanted McDuffie, right? If as far as I remember, the Bills were planning to take McDuffie.
McDuffie Chiefs was probably who they wanted, and there's some things going on with that. But for me, it seems pretty obvious. And I know some people, a lot of fans, they're saying, in the Bills offense, you don't need to be worried about being this spot, that spot. We more so want talent. But the fact is, most of the evaluators I see when talking about Ladd McConkey, they say he will probably have his most success in the slot. You have two guys already that are going to contribute out of there, not even including your tight end. So you technically have three guys that are slot performers. And yes, you can move him around. I'm sure he'll be fine. But to be good on the boundary, you have to be physical at the line. And one of the things that has actually been talked about McConkey is that there's fears that he isn't going to be good against press coverage. You can't be a boundary receiver if you're weak against press coverage. So I understand the thought. Like I said, I'm not against it because I'm sure if the Bills draft him, they have something that they like. They have something that they want to mold into. But I'm just not sold singularly on any of the second tier receivers overall. Like I said, I like Thomas. I like Mitchell. Those two are my preferences if you want to count them in tier two. But the only three guys I am 100% sold on in this draft are Harrison, Neighbors, and Odunze. And if you're talking about the next group, there's a lot of guys that I'm confident will be good, but I can't tell you that I will guarantee you they will be great. I can't tell you that Adonai Mitchell is going to be a star in the NFL. I think he has the potential to be a star in the NFL, but let's be real, he does have some legitimate concerns. The same with Xavier Worthy with his size. The same with Leggett being a late bloomer at South Carolina. Troy Franklin struggling with his ball tracking. I just wish that when we were talking about these second class guys, these second tier guys, that we would be fair to all of them. If we're going to point out the weaknesses that an Adonai Mitchell have, that some of these other guys have, like Keon Coleman, why are we not pointing out the weaknesses that a Ladd McConkey have? And what it comes down to is we're selectively choosing who to hype and who to put down. And I just don't think that's fair because a lot of our fan base, I think right now, has this unrealistic expectations that McConkey or Leggett are bound to be stars at the next level, and that some of these other guys that they go at 28 are going to be busts. And I just don't see it. I just don't see it. It's the same thing like Keon Coleman. Like, everybody gets obsessed with his 4.6 40, and they suddenly think the guy can't play a receiver. Well, all of last year during the season, he was hyped as one of the top five receivers in the draft, and that he was going to be a top 15, top 20 pick. Suddenly some people see some of these combine results. A few people get negative opinions of his film. And now people are like, oh my God, I don't even want him at 60. Like, that's ridiculous. You get this guy in the second round, he's great value. And
for sure,
you see some of these in-game athleticism scores. Coleman actually plays much better than how he tests. And I think at this point, we have just had so much information from so many random sources, a lot of it just being echoing each other, that who knows what the Bills really think. Like, if I saw the Bills at third, say the Bills trade down to 40 and they drafted Keon Coleman, I'm going to assume they saw something in the tape that they really liked about Keon Coleman. And I know it's not good to just trust your organization, always say they're making the right moves. That's stupid. But a guy like Brandon Bean has earned the benefit of the doubt. And if that's what direction he chooses to go, I'm going to trust that he has a reason behind it, and that the coaching staff has a buy-in with whoever they take. Just like when they took Bernard, Shakir, and Dorian Williams, I had faith and trust that they had plans for all of them. I remember in the third round last year, Bills Mafia was freaking out about Dorian Williams, and people were scared that Terrell Bernard was a nobody, never going to do anything in the NFL. And then next thing you know, a year later, we're talking about how Bernard got robbed in All-Pro. So we don't know what the teams are thinking, what they're planning on doing. My best approach is have patience and try to put the dots together. puzzle, put the pieces together, and there's always a plan. So I'm very open-minded with how they target this draft.
I could not agree more, and we're going to look at it. We're going to do it as we wrap this show up. We're going to go through, put our mock draft together, see where we're at. Maybe we're going to make a big deal. Maybe we're going to get rid of some of these premium assets that we were talking about, go up and get one of these guys. We'll see how the board lays out. So, Mike, you ready? We're ready to put our money where our mouth is and mock it up?
Do it.
All right, let's get it going here. Let me get us.
We haven't even talked about double dipping yet. That's another thing. Like, what they do in the first round will determine if they can do that as well.
I would love it. So let's see we're going. Caleb Williams, Drake May. Oh wow.
You know, I feel like we have to restart this already with Marvin Harrison going to the Patriots.
I might restart this because it's going.
Yeah, let's restart fast. This one.
Oh my gosh.
If that happens, the whole trading up thing already out the door.
Yes. 100%. I mean, that was Jaden Daniels just went 10 to the Jets. So that this draft went crazy. All right, let's go slow here too. I want to see it a little bit. All right, here we go. Wow, this really wants.
What is with this?
All right,
maybe gotta change the settings, make it more realistic or something.
I think we just got to do the three rounds of our.
Yeah, let's just do the three round. We don't need a seven round. Oh my goodness,
that's some chaos, man.
That was just crazy right there. And they said, you see that they had Odunze going number four also. So, oh wow, that was wild.
Whew. All right,
let's see this one. Hopefully, we get a little bit more realistic.
Let's get some normalcy here. Yeah, there's some wider. Let's go slower. So,
all right. So at this
point, right now, we've got. Oh my God, all right. This is some technical difficulties, folks. We're gonna refresh it one more time because we need to be ready to trade up.
We gotta get slow enough to where we can trade up. Fourth time is a charm, guys. Learning on the fly with this.
All right, here we go. Caleb, no surprise there. No surprise at all. Jaden Daniels. I'm interested to see what two and three do there, but that makes most
Arizona's sense. Arizona's a big pick here. Okay.
Neighbors. Okay. All right.
So then Harrison. So this is where you'd probably have your first realistic possibility at trading up. At number six to the Giants, I think this is going to be too much to give up to get to that point. I wouldn't do it for Odunze, but this would be the first point where I would say, is it possible? Yeah. I don't think I would do it. I wouldn't make an offer at this point, though.
I think it would be pretty pricey right now to do it. So, well, let's roll through. Let's get to the Bears.
Let's go to Chicago, and that's when we can like first really consider it.
JJ McCarthy. So we got the option. Joe Alt. Brock Bowers, which would be insane if the Falcons pick Brock Bowers to add to Kyle Pitts. But that's
so I think this is pretty safe to say everybody expects Odunze to be right around the top 10. And you're probably going to have to get to number 9 to make this trade. Realistically, because I know these simulators, they can sometimes not be realistic. I think you have to give at least your first this year, your first next year, and a second minimum.
Yeah.
Maybe not, but that's what I feel like you're going to need in this scenario.
Well, I don't think we can actually even make this trade. So I think we're just going to go through with the exercise.
We'll just see what
this would be. Let's just do it before we
make the pick. Would you, if you knew two firsts and a second, would you go forward with that? And do you think that's enough?
I think I would for Rome Odunze. I think you just, and I think it's just what you were saying earlier with the second round pick that you got next year. It hurts to miss the second this year, but if you think that guy can be a full-fledged superstar and a number one wide receiver for years to come, it's the most important thing that they need right now. So I would do it.
I would do it also. I know it's going to be one of those things where at first so many Bills fans are going to be like, no. And then they see him in the first mini camp practice outside, some photos of him catching a football one-handed. and then they'll be at training camp and they'll be wowed by what he's doing. And then they're going to be like, oh, so we got one of those guys now.
Exactly.
And then I think that changes the two. Now, we can always argue about, is it worth the value of the picks to get a guy like that? Look at Julio Jones with Atlanta. They traded up, and honestly, they would have had a Super Bowl if not for blowing a 28-3 lead against the Patriots. So wide receiver, is it the position you want to give up to first and a second for? Probably not if you're an average team or a below average team. If you are the Buffalo Bills, though, and you have Josh Allen, I think you have a valid argument for it. Joe Biscaglia from The Athletic actually made a trade in his most recent mock draft, having the Bills go to number 7, taking Malik Nabers. So there are people that are in the media that think it's a possibility. Now, if I had to put my odds on it, I'd say 25%. I don't think the odds favor it, but I think it's a possibility. I don't know about you, Jake. What would you say?
I think 25% is a good – I think that's a good bet. I do think that, because I think that the small trade up is a more likely option into one of these. I think that we've seen the Seahawks later on, and there's some spots that you could get into the low 20s and everything, because there are going to be teams that like the Chiefs are going to be looking for a receiver in this draft likely. Like, there's going to be teams that they might have to compete for in trading up. And I think you should be, if you think that you love Mitchell or you love Thomas and he's sitting there in the teens or the early 20s, I think you got to do that. This kind of big move, I'm not as sure about. Not as sure about, just because the capital is so much, man.
It's a lot
to give up for a team that still has, like, I would like to see them keep that second round pick this year, ideally, because I would like to see them either add a safety or another D lineman at a premium spot. And if it's a guy there that they like, would I be mad if it's getting a wide receiver? No, but it would be. I still think that those are two issues that they should address. And if you address it in the fourth round, it's not like that could be a bad player as well. But
the tough part I have is this. Right now, they don't have a number one receiver on the Bills.
Yes.
They don't have the salary cap available to them to secure a number one receiver. Not that there's any that they could go out and reach get right now. So you'd have to make a trade that's unlikely to be able to fit anything under the cap. And so if you don't get Odunze or Nabers, you're basically banking on your offense just spreading the wealth. You're basically going into next year saying, Dalton Kincaid, you're going to be our top target guy. And we're going to share the ball with whoever we take at 28, with Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir, and we're going to run the ball. The only concern I have about that is Josh has had an alpha now for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
A guy that he – and I know people are going to say, oh, Josh didn't have Diggs performing in the playoffs. Diggs wasn't there when it mattered. Diggs was quiet down the stretch. I get that. Diggs wasn't perfect. But when you have an alpha, you have a guy that your quarterback trusts he can go to whenever he needs to make a big play. Even before Diggs was on the team, he had John Brown and Cole Beasley. Those guys were still above average receivers at that time in 2019. My one fear, you take away an alpha. And I know people will say that Dalton Kincaid is that alpha now, and so be it. But you take away that boundary receiver that you know you can trust in any instinct. You're basically saying the rest of the guys have to consistently step up,
yeah, great point,
and do the job. And if you take a rookie at 28 and there's growing pains with that person, which there likely will be with whatever rookie you take at 28, I know there will be growing pains with whoever you take in the top 10, but there's going to be less of them. If you assume there's going to be growing pains, that can lead to tip passes that are interceptions, miscommunications, routes run incorrectly. It can have a carryover effect on your offense. Everybody likes to talk about how Kansas City has been perfectly fine without Tyreek Hill. That hasn't been the case.
No.
They scored 22 points a game last year while the Bills were 28 points a game. Kansas City got it done and they won a Super Bowl. But a lot of that was due to their defense.
Yes.
And Kansas City is not the example I want to follow because the Bills defense is not played at that level when it matters in the postseason. So I do think it is a legitimate concern if the Bills go into the season without a true number one. But that's where Josh comes in hand, and where you need him to basically elevate the rest of your team. And if it is Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir, and let's say Ladd McConkey or Xavier Leggett, whoever it is, I trust they're still going to score a boatload of points.
Yes.
But we saw last year, margin of error was tightening for this team.
Yep.
And they lost a lot of close games. You can't afford to have that happen again this upcoming year. But let's assume for this one, since we can't make the trade, the Bills don't do the move up, and we just let it continue going. Let's see it go to 28.
See how the board falls and see who we end up with here. So the Bears, Dallas Turner, they did bring him in for a visit recently. All right, so Adunze still falling down this board. There he goes at to 11. Put him with Justin Jefferson. Maybe he's the Justin Jefferson replacement even by next year. I don't hate that. Having a little tackle run now. Big tackle run. Three in a row.
Now it's going to be interesting. Where does Brian Thomas Jr. go?
Exactly. Quinion Mitchell, that sounds about right. Could it be here? No, another tackle.
Possibility at 18. Now, if Brian Thomas Jr. has been mocked to the Bills.
Wow. Bo Nix to the Steelers. That's a shocker there.
I don't think that's going to be happening. I don't think so.
So if we're Brian still, Thomas Jr., let's, still available right now. Yes.
So if Brian Thomas Jr. gets to this point where you're at 24, 23, then I think you start having some legitimate talks within the Bills room. And it all depends on how their draft board is right now. How much higher is Brian Thomas than an Adonai Mitchell or a Xavier Worthy, a Xavier Leggett, or a Ladd McConkey? If the Bills think that a Brian Thomas is a guy that's closer to that first tier than he is the second tier, I think a trade up absolutely could be in play here. Now, if they think that a Brian Thomas Jr. and a Adonai Mitchell are comparable or similar, in that scenario where you have Dallas, Green Bay, Tampa, and Arizona picking in front of you, you got four teams, I think you take the gamble and you're okay with either one of them falling to you at 28.
Yeah, I agree. And this is the way this is out right now. It doesn't look, I mean, maybe Dallas takes a receiver here, but the Cardinals have already taken Malik Nabers in this scenario. I don't think Green Bay or Tampa is going to be looking for a receiver. So you're in a decent spot, but unless you're worried about somebody else trading up and you have intel, that's really the only other thing you'd have to worry about. So let's see. Let's see what we get to 28 with the Cowboys on the clock. They take Brian Thomas Jr. There it is. So he goes to the Cowboys. I could see the Cowboys making a swing at a wide receiver in the first round for sure. So here we are on the clock. We've got – these are the top – just the top of the board here. Don't think they're going to go corner. I mean
– PFF loves Cooper.
They Cooper do. Right there. Jackson Powers Johnson, like, I could definitely see that. But here's our guy, Adonai Mitchell. There's Ladd McConkey. If we're talking wide receiver, which is what we've really been leaning towards – We've got our pick of the firm second tier. Burton, who we didn't talk about much, Coleman, Leggett. I don't think they'd take any of these guys in the first round. I think we would just take Adonai Mitchell here. If it was you and I doing it, I think that, and I would be perfectly happy with that. And if
you
held them at 28, that'd be a great outcome for the Bills.
Yep. So let's just talk about a few of these options right now. I know we've already on the show right now, but it really would come down to these three guys. Where do they have Xavier Worthy, by the way?
It's a great question because I did not see him down a little lower in the rank, but his ADP is much higher.
See, this is the wild part, and I do think PFF and these mock draft simulators mess with everybody because they see their rankings, and I don't even think that's close to being accurate. They have him at 68. I think there's a better chance that Xavier Worthy will go late first, early second, then I do him falling to the third round. I would say the guys that are in play at this pick right now would be Adonai Mitchell, Ladd McConkey, Troy Franklin, and Xavier Worthy. I don't think that a Xavier Legette is in play at 28. I know he's been linked to the Bills a lot, but I've been saying Brandon Bean goes according to value. And there's a lot of people that don't have Legette in their top 40. To take a guy like that at 28 seems like it just seems like a little bit high. It seems like a jump for me, a little bit of a leap. Now, I can respect the talent. I just don't think that 28 is the right time for that guy unless your other options are expended. I know a lot of people are going to disagree, and they're going to tell me, Mike, if you love a guy and you see him at 28 and you don't think he's going to fall to 60, take him. I get it. But there are some concerns with his game. There's a reason why some draft evaluators have him at 50, 60, a little bit lower.
Yeah.
Him waiting until his fifth year to perform at a high level in the SEC is something to be slightly concerned about. Some people will say he's a late bloomer. Well, why do NBA teams not draft guys that are 22, 23 years old? Because by the time you're 19, 20, they already know what you are.
Yep.
And they want to draft for the highest potential and get the max amount of years during your prime. Now, Dalton Kincaid was a late bloomer, and he was already 24 when he was drafted, but he was a tight end, a different position. Wide receiver, some of these guys are much younger than what Xavier Legette is. Go back to the top. I'm going to narrow this down. I think we're looking at Adonai Mitchell, Ladd McConkey, and Franklin, and Worthy, and I'll go with Mitchell. I think Worthy could make it interesting, though. That speed...
Yeah,
I think that speed is going to get him selected much higher than what this PFF simulator thinks.
I agree with that. I'm down with Mitchell too. I think if it was came down to this,
are you even worried about what people are saying about him pre-draft? I mean, I get the cons where people say his tape is slower than what his testing is. But in that he takes off routes. But I really don't think people are realizing how impressive his season actually was at Texas last year. Like, this guy was a playmaker.
Yeah.
And he didn't just do it against the Sisters of the Poor. He had two touchdowns against Alabama.
Yep.
Like, he scorched Alabama. He had big games against some of their top opponents. To me, that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at, how does this kid do against his best competition? And when he played his best competition, that's when he was at his brightest.
Yep.
That tells me this guy has the NFL talent. And while we were talking about the cons with Mitchell earlier, let's be real. McConkey, we talked about his issues with press coverage at times, how some people project him to be a slot guy. He's also had an injury history. He's missed a bunch of games. And there's questions about Ladd McConkey. Didn't really perform consistently throughout your career at Georgia. Now, you had a very good season 2 years ago. But this past year, I know he missed games. It wasn't like he was lighting up teams on a consistent basis. So I would be fine, Mitchell, McConkey, Worthy. But I give Mitchell the edge just because I think out of those three guys, he has the highest ceiling and the best ability to translate into a future number one receiver.
Yeah, I agree. I would honestly have it be Mitchell, Worthy, Franklin, McConkey if it was my four out of those four. So I think we're pretty much in line. We're gonna lock it in. Adonai Mitchell is a Buffalo Bill at 28. So let's get to round two. Let's see how this board breaks out, and then we'll get to we'll see what happens there.
Now, as this keeps going, I'll say this: round two, I think safety is definitely a target I'm looking at late second round before seeing how it plays out.
It took us out. It just said, okay, you're doing round one. We're going to next week. We're doing the mock draft again because
I'm going to A-minus one round mock draft. Great job. But let's just talk about round two quick. I think realistically there's a few options that the Bills could do. I think ideally for me, I want wide receiver round one. If one of those guys is available that we mentioned, I would love safety round two. I think that's my ideal scenario. I don't have a preference necessarily on who. There's a couple guys that I think could work at 60. I know people have talked about double dip. I don't think you double dip round one, round two. To me, that's basically saying you don't have confidence in who you're taking in the first round at receiver.
I agree.
And when you already have Shakir and Samuel, we saw last year with Hardy and Sherfield, people were talking about how we were going to use all of our wide receivers last year. That didn't play out that way. It didn't even come close. So I don't want to go into a year assuming that we have four wideouts that have to contribute. Because if you go round one, round two, that second round guy better play. Yeah. And they're not going to see the field if you draft somebody round one. So I think safety is realistically the way to go round two. And if you've got an Adonai Mitchell and then a starting caliber safety, or at least someone that can maybe sit on the bench for a year, play when there's an injury, get some reps here or there, and then develop into your starting safety a year from now, I'd be perfectly fine with that.
Yeah, and we know how important safety's been to the Sean McDermott defense. That's not my biggest concern, because I think McDermott's a smart enough defensive mind where he can make it work, and it just happened that he had, you know, one of the best safety duos in the league, and that's credit to McDermott scheming it around them and their strengths and everything, but also to the two players that they had in that position. I don't think it's necessarily the biggest thing. I would if there's a guy that is of the right value in the interior of the D-line, I love building through the trenches, and so that's where I would lean, but I would not be mad at one of the safeties, especially if they love the guy and think that he can step in day one and potentially be a starter or get a ton of snaps rotating in and out with Edwards or Rapp. Because we saw Rapp, you know, we saw a lot of times where there were three safeties on the field last year. So if there's a guy they think that they can run that defense again next year, I would be down for it. Next week, we're going to – I think it's Draft Buzz is the one I usually use. I don't pay
for the PFF. We got to improve our mock draft game.
We will get better at the mock draft game for sure. But I think that we're going to have a fun couple weeks of speculation here, and it's going to be a fun couple nights of the NFL draft once we get to it. But we paid the bills, Mike. We're here. Shout out to Outlet Liquor, our sponsor, the place to buy a case. For myself, Jake Micah, go follow Mike on YouTube and follow him at Mike_Bunt on Twitter. Dropping Bunt takes all the time. He's been talking about everything. If you want to talk about Canisius basketball, want to talk about Sabres season ending and where we're going from there, which that's a whole other podcast. Go to Crossing Story, but we could have our own chat about that, I'm sure, too. And then obviously the draft coming up, and then into the offseason, we'll be here on Pay the Bills. So thank you, Mike, for joining. Thank you, folks. Go Bills, and have a great weekend.